Hour number three, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier, Chase McCabe had to step out for a minute. Big Joe Dubin out in Key West, so he's living up the good life right now.
Wow.
Tell me about it.
What a gig.
I have on the one and only play-by-play announcer for the Nashville Sounds, Jeff Hem. Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing great. Good to have you guys here. It is a fantastic day for our home opener. I'm so glad Mother Nature did us a solid with tonight. What a perfect day. Good to have you guys here, and thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. You know, what is your biggest thing looking at this Nashville Sounds team of 2026 going into the season?
I mean, how young it is. This is the youngest team that I think we've had to start a year in my time with the Sounds. I think it's one of the youngest the Brewers have had at AAA. 16 of the 28 guys are 25 years old or younger. And only two guys are 30 years or older. And, you know, AAA rosters, as you well know, like, they can be melting pots. And
yes,
a lot of times you've got at least a good handful of 33-year-olds, 32-year-olds. This guy's got 5 years in the big leagues, and maybe he was hurt, and he's kind of on the comeback trail. The large majority of this roster is guys who've come up from AA, have not been to the big leagues yet, or they've been there and they haven't stuck yet, like Tyler Black and some of the other returning Sounds who are still early in their career. So just how young and dynamic and, like as the scouts would say, toolsy a lot of these players are, just the raw ability. And then they'll learn to harness that and to figure out, okay, this is how AAA pitchers are going to pitch to me. But just a really young, exciting group. I mean, the Brewers have the best of both worlds. They've got a really good big league roster that expects to contend again this year, and they've won their division, I think, five of the last 6 years. So they've got that, and they've got the number one farm system in baseball. And especially for the way they operate and build and develop, I mean, they've got the best of both worlds. And then the Sounds, we reap the benefits of that with the product on the field, as talented as it is. And the Sounds have had winning records several years in a row. This roster is just built a little bit differently than the previous years early in the season. And it's really exciting. And, you know, I know you guys got to catch up with Rick Sweet. And, you know, he joins me every Sunday on the broadcast on the pregame show. And we were talking on Sunday in Norfolk about how the Brewers and Sweet and the coaches have to kind of thread the needle of patience for some of these young guys, but also urgency. Because if you're at AAA, that means the parent club expects you to be ready for the big leagues and thinks you're ready for the big leagues. So it's this, like, patience and urgency combination that is a unique dynamic in baseball. So a really exciting young team here in Nashville to start the year.
Love to hear that. Yeah, you know, Rick Sweet, he mentioned about, you know, Joey Weimer asked him about his whole prolific start to the season, but he mentioned when he was here in Nashville, he wasn't quite ready for the big leagues. He was forced into the situation with Milwaukee, hence the reason why he was DFA'd last season three times. But, I mean, it just goes to show you the quality and talent there is here at the minor league level, especially here in Nashville.
Yeah, and the Brewers are as good as anybody at finding that talent. And they admit, and all big league teams will admit, like, it's not always going to happen for that player with them. Like in the case of Joey Weimer, he got major league time with Milwaukee, but maybe it's now going to work for him to blossom with the Nationals. I think of Lucas Ersig, who's a reliever now for the Royals. He got dealt to the A's a few years ago by the Brewers. The A's were in a spot where they're like, hey, we like that guy. We would put him on our 40-man roster. The Brewers did right by the player to trade him away because they're like, look, we like you too. We just don't have a spot for you. And now Ersig is blossoming somewhere else. So all these major league teams, they want all their guys to become stars for them. But there's not always timing or room for that to happen. And if the player becomes a great player somewhere else, like you guys talked about with Sweetie, like that's still a win for the original organization that had that player. They identified it. It just for one reason or another did not work out with that same organization.
Yeah, and adding on to just former players here in Nashville along with some of the injuries, when it comes to Jackson Chirillo, it was out 2 to 4 weeks. It was made last week on opening day with the broken hand. Could we potentially see him here in Nashville for a little rehab assignment?
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it's rare that a major league player misses multiple weeks on the injured list and doesn't have a rehab assignment. It's not an automatic that a guy would have a rehab assignment. You know, a lot of variables could play into that, but that's always one of the first things I think of when I see someone for the Brewers go on the injured list. I'm like, oh, injury, okay, I wonder if we'll see him come through. You know, same thing for like Quinn Priester, who's on their injured list and is missing more time than Chirillo is expected to miss. And as a pitcher, and you think, okay, they got to ramp him back back up. Maybe that leads to a rehab assignment. So certainly could see Churio here on rehab assignment. If it's more on that 4 week end than the 2 week end, in my mind that leads likelier to a rehab assignment because he's been out away from game action even longer.
Right.
Talking to Jeff Hem, voice of the Sounds. Hello, Jeff.
Welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm glad you made it for this segment of your show that I'm on.
I know. Thanks for jumping on.
You're only doing like four jobs at once.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Just a few. What can you remember in your time here? Like the biggest hype for a rehab assignment. Didn't Josh Hamilton play?
There's two parts to that. If it's purely as a Sound, I was starting to think there. But I remember a couple years ago when Joey Votto was with the Reds
to start
the year and hit a ball like out to the guitar on his rehab assignment. And that's always a weird emotion as an announcer. You're like impressed by the other player and respectful of his career, but it's like I don't want him to homer off of the Sound. So Votto comes to mind. Josh Hamilton.
Correa? Didn't Correa play for Round Rock?
Yes. I think we did see Correa for Round Rock. I remember Correa and Fresno coming up with the Astros, but I think you're right. I think he did rehab here. The Sounds have had Christian Yelich come through. Yeah. Churio last season was kind of fun because he was here so briefly at the end of 23 that it's like, oh, we're seeing Churio almost as long on this rehab assignment as we saw him on his way to the big league. So that one was kind of fun because he was still so young, and you don't think of him yet as an established big leaguer, but he kind of is. So those are a couple. Now you get the wheels turning, though. That's
Josh Donaldson?
Donaldson was not a rehab, at least when they had signed him on a minor league deal. Certainly by like pedigree, that's one of the more notables. Like Barry Zito was not a rehab assignment. We had him all of 2015, but as a former Cy Young Award winner, that was a cool experience. So yeah, there have been, in one way or another, rehab or otherwise, a lot of big names that have either played for or against the Sounds just in the last 10 years of this ballpark.
That's crazy to think about. How have you seen Robert Gasser evolve since he was acquired, and I think he was in the Hader trade? He's been in the big leagues a few times, but he's going to be here at least to start. How has he progressed?
Yeah, he was phenomenal on opening night in Norfolk. He struck out 11 in 5 2/3, and I caught up with him the next day on my pregame, and he's like, I don't think of myself as a veteran, but Frazier and I were talking about like, this is such a young team that Gasser feels like one of the veterans on the team. We've really seen all the different types of scenarios that could have a guy at AAA. When Gasser became Sound late in 22, he'd barely been at AAA. Then in 23, he was the International League Pitcher of the Year, didn't get a call-up that year, did in 24, ends up having the Tommy John surgery. We see him as a rehabber last year. Then he goes to the big leagues and pitches in the postseason for the Brewers as a reliever. Now he's back to being what we know of him as a starter kind of waiting in the wings. So he's really evolved and just gotten better. Like, that's what I always try to remind, listeners and followers of the game with the role that I have, where you see what guys do behind the scenes all the time. These guys are never the finished product, and they're never thinking they're the finished. They're always trying to get better and tinker and, maybe this pitch, maybe this grip, maybe whatever it is. So I think when I think of Gasser, I think he's ready to pitch right now in the big leagues, and the Brewers could use him tomorrow if they needed him to help them. But he's also, like, down here working on things all the time and not thinking, well, I'll just kind of sit back and wait till they need me. There's an urgency down here at AAA, even though it's a long season and day to day, you can't approach baseball the way you can football. From a mentality standpoint and an urgency standpoint, I think kind of you can. And I think Gasser's in that group of, like, in order to be ready and to stay ready, he's got to try to strive for perfection at AAA to truly be ready for when the Brewers might need him.
I'm sure it's obviously nice and good for business when you have a top prospect that is not going to be here very long. And so you want to get people to come out and see him. But with a team as young as the Sounds are, especially with I was looking through, I don't think anybody except for maybe one guy in the infield or a hitter is on the 40-man roster right now.
Yeah.
Is that kind of cool to see, where you can watch that true progression as the year goes on, knowing that a guy is probably going to spend a good chunk, if not the whole season here?
No doubt. I mean, we were talking before you jumped on, like, the 16 of the 28 guys on the opening day roster are 25 years or younger.
Yeah.
Now, some of those have a little bit of major league time or a little bit of AAA time, but a number of them are brand new to this level for the first time, yet because of like what you mentioned, where only one position player right now, Tyler Black, is on the 40-man roster, Black would probably be the first guy they would call up if they had a need. But it also depends on the position. And all of a sudden, you've got a guy who's brand new to AAA that tomorrow could still get called up to the big leagues. And it's this dynamic we were talking about. Like Rick Sweet brought it up to me the other day. They've got to be patient, they being the Brewers and Sweet and the coaching staff. They've got to be patient with a young roster. It might take a little bit of time for some of these guys to kind of figure out AAA, but there's also an urgency of, like, making sure they're ready, because if you're at AAA, that means the Brewers think tomorrow you could help them if they needed you. So odds are that most of those young players will spend a good amount of the season here, but there's no guarantee. And when there's a need, they'll call up who they think is the most ready, and that could be a guy who's had 2 weeks at AAA, and that's it. And you're expected to perform at the major league level. It's a fun concept at AAA to think that truly these guys any second could get that news that they're going up, and they could have all types of different levels of background and longevity in the game.
We'll have more with the voice of the Sounds, Jeff Hem, coming up next, live from First Horizon Park. It's opening day here on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Of course. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Nick Frazier in for Big Joe. You've heard this a time or two.
I have heard it a time or two. And the beginning, you wouldn't know it's like a Cubs song. Talking about opening day or baseball season. And
the late Steve Goodman.
Yep.
With Go Cubs Go. And Jeff Hem is with us, voice of the Sounds. And I will tell you, the first time I got to hear this in Wrigley after a win and everybody's holding up the W, it is pretty cool.
When you get 39,000 people singing anything together, it's why we all love to go to like live concerts, because everybody sings and you know the words, and there's just that community effect. So I agree with you. It's funny, the last year the Brewers and Cubs met in the postseason, and I've got a family of Cubs fans and a lot of extended family in the Chicago area still, but I feel like I cover the Brewers. I certainly cover a level of the Brewers here with the Sounds. And I had people in my family surprised that I was rooting for the Brewers season last year, the Cubs. I'm like, I know all these guys. Like, these guys are some of my friends. You can't work in this game and be around a team and an organization and not become a fan. So I was that Brewers roster even today is 85% former Sounds. So I didn't, when we were an A's affiliate, I didn't pretend to be from Oakland, but I still root for Matt Olson, and you get to know some of those people. And then we were a Rangers affiliate, and when they won the World Series a couple years ago, I was really happy for a lot of people in the Rangers organization. So I'm not going to claim that I'm from Milwaukee and have been a decades long Brewers fan, but doing what I do and being around who I'm around, I was all in on the Brewers last year. I follow them far more than the Cubs. Your fandom just changes the longer you work in the game, and the longer I live here, longer I go without living in Chicago area. So just hearing that song, it's like I'm thinking of 12-year-old me, not 30-year-old me.
It is kind of crazy to think. So since you've been with the Sounds, you've been bookend by the Brewers, and then as you mentioned, the A's, the Rangers. And that's it, right?
Yes.
Yeah, those three.
Yeah. Yeah, 16 of the last 21 Sounds seasons, they've been a Brewers affiliate. Yeah. They had the 5 years in the middle with the A's and the Rangers.
I remember growing up, obviously going to Old Greer Stadium to watch the Sounds play. My dad and I went, and it was like a random Wednesday or Thursday night, and there's hardly anybody in the stands to start the game. They're playing the iCubs, and this was before Twitter and all that stuff. And quickly people realize who is in the lineup for the iCubs on a rehab assignment. We're talking about that. Some guy named Sosa.
Oh, boy.
That place, you couldn't, by the end of the game, it was packed.
Yeah.
Because word got out that, hey, Sosa's playing.
Wow, and that's cool.
Those were the kind of the cool days. You've seen, we asked Sweetie about this earlier, you've seen the ABS in different variants of the robo-umps, as we would jokingly call them, to the challenge system that is now in the major leagues starting this year.
Yeah.
You and I were talking before the show of, you like it, the human element is still there, but it also gives you the technology to make sure the call is right, but there's a strategy to it. How have you seen the strategy evolve in AAA and what fans are going to see in the majors this year?
Yeah, and I don't just like it. I love it. I don't think there's a negative with it. I mean, it's quick. the strategy component.
You tap your head and they look
at
it.
Yeah, and you win your challenge, you keep it. Which, side tangent, college basketball needs to adopt that. If you win a challenge, you shouldn't lose a timeout for it. But, like, there's no negative. It plays up on the video board. Everybody can see it. You can see it on television. You can see it in the stadium. Everybody's on the same page. It also proves most of the time, even when a call is overturned and the umpire was wrong, to me it still underscores how good the umpires are 99% of the time. I mean, you see, oh, wow, it just missed by like 0.3 inches. And you're like, okay, that's not much.
Or an inch if you're Buckner.
And those examples are going to go viral and all that. But like, and the Angel Hernandez memes and all that. But like, the bottom line is the umpires, I talked to some over the last several years, the umpires like it too. They might take some getting used to for big league umpires who've never been a part of it until this year, but it even if they get overturned a few times in a game, guess what? When the game ends and there wasn't some huge controversy, no one really remembers.
Right.
Versus they would if there was some egregious call with no sort of recourse, and that's all we're talking about for the next 24 hours. And you'd certainly hate to end a postseason game on that kind of controversy. So it helps the umpires. It's good for the umpires. It's good for the fan. It's good for the players. They like the human element. Your question about the strategy, having only two challenges instead of three, which we had three at our level a couple of years ago, that is a massive difference. Because if you have two, the players and coaches and managers kind of look at it as, okay, we only have one. Because they don't want to run out. Because if you run out early in the game and you have no recourse, you could argue some umpires in the back of their mind might factor that in, knowing there's nothing you can do about it no matter how I call my strike zone. I'm not saying they would make bad calls on purpose, but there's a freedom that could come with that the teams don't want to allow the umpires to have. So the strategy component is like, look, first inning, two outs, bases empty, you, the batter, might feel like you got hosed. It's in your best interest to let it go.
Yeah.
Eighth inning, bases loaded, one-run game, wildly different than first inning, two outs, nobody on. So the players down here have had to learn to have some discipline with it and a little bit of feel, because their request has to come so quickly that I would think as a player, it's really easy to think like, okay, yeah, we got nobody on. Like, I'm going to let it, like, in the moment, you're like, no, that call was wrong. I want to challenge it. And before you know it, you've burned one of your team's challenges in the second inning, and you just don't get that much time to consider all the factors. So it'll be interesting at the major league level if they actually have rules within the clubhouse of, hey, don't challenge before the fifth inning, or don't challenge unless multiple runners are on base, because you can run out of them very quickly, and then that's on you. It's not on the umpire, no matter what the umpire might do later in the game.
Is baseball at the best point that it has been since you've been involved in the game, with the advent of the pitch clock, the pace of play, which desperately, we all know, it needed. Yeah. I mean, I remember starting my career producing games with you. I mean, we'd be there for 4 hours, you know, with some of these games.
Yeah.
And it just, that's not healthy. So do you feel like it's at its best point, its healthiest point than it's been in a long time?
I do. I think the product is as good as it's been. Because what the pitch clocks have done, and the fear was, oh my gosh, everything's going to be so sped up, it'll be a 1-0 game all the time. The offense is still there.
No,
it just cuts out the little 5 seconds here, 7 seconds here, the Nomar adjusting the batting gloves after every pitch. Like, that's what it cuts out, and those little chunks of time add up, and by the end of the night, you're like, wow, that was a 2-hour and 34-minute game that would have been a 3-hour, 11-minute game in the past. But the drama was there, the high scoring was there. Like, so I think the product is as good as it's ever been. I think they're, and MLB, to their credit, has instituted a lot of what I think are good improvements. Pitch clocks, the challenges, banning the shift, I think, is a good thing. Just the game had gotten to a point where it was just a given. The second baseman's in shallow right, and then you're going for a homer or a strikeout. They're trying to increase the running game, and the Sounds and Brewers run the bases as aggressively as anybody. That's fun to watch from a fan standpoint. So I think all of it is good, and it's never been harder to hit a baseball than it is right now, because the velocity is greater than it's ever been, and the movement is greater than it's ever been. So MLB, I think, is doing what it can within reason to try to level it out a little bit and just overall improve the product. I do think it's about as healthy as it's been.
Yeah, Jeff Hems online here with us here at
live and in living color
muscle memory. Yeah, here at First Horizon Park. But adding on to the conversation about that, watching a lot of the MLB games from last week up to today, there's a pop in the crowd. You can hear it when they do a reverse call of the ABS. And to me, it's no longer a social outing for a baseball game. You actually get engaged with the game from that ABS review.
Yeah.
So I think it just changes the trajectory. And again, you're absolutely right, Jeff, that the momentum of the game has never been better.
It's a great point, because as I was rattling off all the positives of the challenge system, another one is not just the strategy, it's the drama of it.
Right.
The anticipation, like, was this – I mean, we've seen a couple of really late game, like, game-changing challenges here with the Sounds the last couple of years. A strikeout in the ninth inning, wait a minute, was it a strikeout? No, it's ball four. And, like, the crowd gets into it because they can see it all, and you see the thing coming in like you do in tennis, was it on the line or not? And there's anticipation. It's like the perfect level of time of, like, between the challenge and the visual of where the pitch was. It's not that long, but it's long enough that you're, like, waiting for it and you're engaged to see how it plays out. The drama, the strategy, the little bit of time that it takes, I think the challenge system is great. And then we all see it. We move on. Nobody's, like, still mad at the umpire. And, again, like, at this level, I want to say it's been, like, 53-54% over the last few years the umpire was right. The player was incorrect on the challenges. Umpires are really good. They're human. They will make mistakes. They do make mistakes like we all do. But if you are strategic with your challenges, there is recourse. And at the end of the day, the umpire is not the story after the game of deciding the game, because the team either had a challenge or, hey, you had your chances and you blew your challenges earlier. You know, hang with them.
Yeah, and also, too, for people that are baseball fans like all of us here, it's adding another element to the broadcast to it. I know for you, you're probably thinking, is it there? You can add a little bit more, you know, ad-lib to it. And I think that's what makes baseball so great in today's element, is that you can be a little more fun with the broadcast.
And when the pitch clocks first started, I remember feeling it on the broadcast of, like, I have no time to even get the sponsor reads. Those first few games were like 2 hours and 8 minutes. Well, the pitchers especially realized, okay, that 25-second clock is more time than I thought it was. And so that has leveled out, too, where there, I think there's the perfect amount of time in between pitches. And baseball broadcasting, as we all know, is like this great storytelling medium and kind of the, oh, it can be on in the background and it's your companion and all that. And all that is not untrue. But the product, I think, on a radio broadcast and television product broadcast and at the ballpark is a better product with the pitch clocks. Because, yes, I might have to be a little quicker with the story between pitches or the sponsor reads or something like that. But that's a good thing, because the next piece of action is about to come. And that's what we're all there for at the end of the day, is the action. So it's changed how you have to broadcast it a little bit. You've got to be readier. But that's good. That's a good thing. That's on me, the broadcaster, and we, the broadcasters, to figure out. That's not a negative. That was just an adjustment that the pitch clocks created. But it's a better product. It makes you, the fan at the game, think, like, well, our guy's leading off the next inning. Like, we better be a little quicker to go get our hot dog or go get the beer or go use the restroom. And, like, that's a good thing for a fan to not have these, well, we got 20 minutes before he's going to bat. Like, that's all good.
And another thing I have that real quick, Chase, is about the pitching staff. This last one for me to go to him. When it comes to this pitching staff for the National Sounds, Rick Sweet has talked about a lot of pitchers want to come to Milwaukee's organization to just re-energize their career, or if they're young players, they want to try to figure out something. What do you see out of this pitching staff going into 2026?
Yeah, I think the Brewers are as good as anybody at maybe taking a pitcher from another organization who it didn't work out there for whatever reason, and they see something, whether it's a grip, whether it's a pitch, whether it's mechanical, whether it's just a mental freedom for that guy to go somewhere else. The Brewers do a really good job of taking what you do best as a pitcher and making that better instead of saying, I know you've been overhand. Guess what? You're a side armor now.
Yeah.
They don't want to overhaul you. They just want to enhance what you do best. And this is a really young Sounds pitching staff. I mean, the Brewers have the luxury of knowing that, you know, God forbid they really get tested on their depth this year with injuries. They've got 3, 4, 7, 8 guys who are like ready today on the Sounds pitching staff to go help them, whether that's a start, whether that's a month, whether it's the rest of the season, to get through, because all these teams know they're going to need, you know, 45, maybe 50 guys to play for them at the major league level by the end of the year. You have to have that depth. And depth is not just we have a lot of bodies at AAA. Depth is we have guys at AAA who can come help us not miss a beat at the big league level.
Right.
That's where the Brewers are as skillful as anybody.
It'll be fun seeing Garrett Stallings, who played at the University of Tennessee.
Yeah. Yeah, we got a former Vol. He's out of the bullpen right now. He was our pitcher of the year last season. You talk about like willing to do whatever it took for the staff.
Yeah.
He was great last season and expected to have a crucial role again this year. Yep.
Jeff, always good to see you. We'll be listening tonight at 6:20 and every night this week on 94.9 The Fan as Sounds Baseball is back.
Appreciate you guys. We look forward to seeing everybody at the ballpark this week and all season long too.
Absolutely. Well, more coming here from First Horizon Park here on 102.5 The Game.